Committee on Business and Labor for April 1st, 2013. Before we get going, we are going to be holding over House Bill 2950 until Thursday, or until Monday, the 8th of April, if any of you are here for that meeting. Okay, we're going to be opening and closing and opening and closing for a bit, so we have representatives that can speak on their bills. So I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2923. Jan, if you could summarize, and Mr. Hanna, and then we'll be opening the public hearing on 3435.
Madam Chair, committee members, this measure extends the exclusive remedy protections of the workers' compensation statutes to the partners, limited liability company partners, general partners, limited liability partners, and limited partners. Declares an emergency effective on passage, and you have before you a dash 3 amendment, and it modifies when the exemption does not apply, and it modifies the application of the provisions to only those claims or causes of action that are arising on or after the effective date.
Okay, fine, thank you. Representative Hanna. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members, thank you. Nice to see you all back after the Easter break or weekend. I'm here to speak about House Bill 2923. I believe it's a relatively simple bill that clarifies Oregon workers' compensation statutes, bringing printed language in line with what many, if not all of us, have believed to be current law. A recent Court of Appeals decision interpreted absence of particular language within our workers' compensation statutes to be an intentional omission. Specifically, the court indicated that LLC members and owners are not protected under the workers' compensation exclusive remedy provisions because they are not specifically listed in the statute.
Representative Hanna, I know we know you, but the record doesn't. So if you could identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, thank you for that. I appreciate knowing the omission. Good morning. Bruce Hanna, State Representative from House District 7 out of Roseburg.
Thank you.
Backing up to the testimony, this flies in the face of commonly accepted liability principles for LLCs, their members, and their owners. The omission cited by the court does not reflect legislative intent. It is merely a situation of statute not keeping pace with advancements in corporate governance law and the widespread acceptance of limited liability companies as a form of corporate ownership. This bill is about a simple but much-needed fix. Without it, Oregon's 130,000 limited liability companies face uncertainty in their liability exposure. These companies represent a major part of our economic activity. They represent risk takers and capital investors, and importantly, they represent job creators in Oregon. No one argues that employers bear responsibility for maintaining a safe work environment and have long been a supporter of our solid workers' compensation laws here in Oregon. This bill is not about that. It is merely about clarifying our statute so that the letter of the law coincides with the spirit of the law. I want to thank the collaborative work of so many organizations and stakeholders to get to this Dash 3 amendment, which provides even more clarity prepared for today's work session. I encourage you to support House Bill 2923 with the Dash 3 amendments. And Madam Chair, I thank you for the opportunity to present in front of you and your committee this morning. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you have any questions of Representative Hanna? Representative Barton?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hanna. I just wanted to thank your office in particular, and also a lot of people I think we'll hear from later for collaborating on this. As some of us know, it was touch and go for a while, so that both sides had their swords out from time to time. And when the Cortez decision came out, it seemed like a lot of attorneys were saying a lot of different things about what it meant. Some people thought it was the end of the world. Some people thought it was no big deal. I admit I was kind of on the what's the fuss about end of the spectrum, but I really appreciate everybody working together. As I see it, I think this bill just clarifies existing law right now, and I'm just glad we could clarify any ambiguities and not have a big fight here. So thank you. Also, a particular thank you to, of course, Angela Wilhelms in your office, who I think spearheaded a lot of the collaborative efforts, and Drew Hagedorn also. Thanks.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, thank you. I do appreciate there are a number of people who spent significant amount of time, and I talked about this early on, with so many small Oregon businesses organized under this method. I think it was an issue to begin with where they simply didn't know how much risk they were at when the decision was created. And so I was feeling the pain because I think a lot of people didn't quite understand how much of an issue it was, and again, there were a number of business organizations that got behind the idea of fixing this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Also, Representative Cameron, if you'd like to speak, and then we'll gavel this out and bring in a new one. If you could identify yourself for the record, you look a little older this today than you did on Friday.
Madam Chair, thank you for the compliment. My hair gets blonder by the day. This is State Representative Kevin Cameron.
And it is his birthday today.
House District 19, and here to just share with you back in 1995 when I opened our first business here in the state of Oregon after working for many other people, was advised by attorneys to form a limited liability company. And did so with the understanding that a limited liability company, as long as you follow the rules, would have the same protection as an S corporation or a C corporation when it came to the area of workers' compensation. And I'm here to support this bill, and I obviously, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Barton, your comments I appreciate. I don't know what happened behind the scenes. Obviously, I didn't think there needed to be any swords on this, and as many, many hundreds, thousands of members of limited liability companies in this state deserve and expect this protection as they form those types of entities in the state of Oregon. So I would encourage you to pass this bill and send it over to the Senate, the floor, and send it to the Senate so we can have the surety that we all need and deserve in the state of Oregon. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions of Representative Cameron? Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. And I just want to verify that you are in support of the Dash 3 amendments or just the original underlying bill.
I didn't see the Dash 3 amendments, and I know that the art of compromise is what happens in this building. I heard the Dash 3 amendments introduced just now saying that it wasn't, that it was prospective from here forward. I think that's wrong, but I'm not, as I would say, those of us that have been operating as limited liability companies in the state of Oregon, myself, since 1995, have thought that I've had this protection all along, follow the rules of the law, and this just wasn't in the statute, and so putting it in the statute is important. Obviously, it wouldn't be my wish to make it prospective. It should be all along. So right. If that's what's in the Dash 3s, I'd rather see the bill without that.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Representative Cameron.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'm going to close the House of the public hearing for now on House Bill 2923 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3435. Representative Gomberg and Senator Steiner Hayward, and Jan, if you could.
Hi, Madam Chair, committee members. I'll draw your attention to the Dash 1 amendment, which replaces the measure. The Dash 1 increases from 1 to 5 the number of premises owned by or leased by the licensee where tastings may occur.
Okay, thank you. Senator and Representative, whoever goes first.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. David Gomberg from the Central Oregon Coast and House District 10. And it's good to be back before the committee talking about small business legislation. And it's particularly good to be here first thing on a Monday morning with a good, positive piece of legislation. As all of you know, I'm a small business guy. My company makes kites and we have retail stores. And it's hard to imagine that I would be prohibited from selling the kites that I make in my own store. But that's exactly the kind of example that we're talking about with the piece of legislation before you, dealing with small distilleries in Oregon. Because currently, distilleries in Oregon are only allowed to sell their product in two outlets, even if they have more outlets than this. And the bill simply would increase the number of outlets from 2 to 5. Wineries can do that. Breweries can do that. But our exciting and emerging distillery industry cannot do that. Now, a couple of things I should point out to you that I think are quite important in this legislation. The first of them is that these outlets where they could sell the product are limited to their own brand. There are about 40 micro distilleries in the state. All 40 of them couldn't do this unless they start opening stores or outlets or other kinds of enterprises in other places. They're limited to selling the product in their own location. The second thing that's significant is that the product would still go through OLCC and collect all the taxes and everything else that we're used to seeing done. So there's nothing unusual people here, except that we're allowing people to sell their own product in more locations. 40 micro distilleries in the state, I think at this point we're probably referring to two, but I'd like to see that grow and improve. Another element of the bill that isn't readily apparent on its face is, what are they making these distilled products out of? Well, we're making them out of local agriculture products. So I would submit to you that this is a small business bill, this is a pro-agriculture bill, this is a buy-local bill, and this is a pro-tourism bill, since a lot of these outlets are in tourist locations. And in fact, the two enterprises that I think would move quickly on this, both of them have outlets in my own tourist district. So I wanted to share that with you. I think it's a good, positive piece of legislation, and we should speed it through this committee and on its way to the Senate and then on to the governor, and we can be enjoying this the products of this legislation by this time next year. Senator?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Kenemer, Vice Chair Barton. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Steiner Hayward. I'm the state senator from District 17, which I love to refer to as the most diverse district in Oregon, aka Northwest Portland, unincorporated Washington County, and more. I am very supportive of this measure as well, and I'm very proud to co-sponsor it with Representative Gomberg. Two of Oregon's micro distilleries have their homes in my district, two very well-known ones, Bull Run and Clear Creek. Again, both of whom use Oregon products, Oregon agriculture. Clear Creek is known worldwide for its really amazing brandies made with Oregon fruit. And this is analogous to the bill that I carried with Representative Harker last session, which allowed distilleries to do on-site sales when they did tastings. And this has substantially increased the business. I've had multiple conversations with the owner of Bull Run about this, and he says that bill has already dramatically increased their sales in a very controlled, appropriate way. You only have to think about the success of the McMinimins enterprise to understand the value of being able to sell your own products at your own outlet. We're not asking in this bill for as many outlets as the McMinniman brothers have for theirs, but we certainly do think that our micro distilleries deserve the same opportunities for business expansion as our breweries and our wineries have. There's not a boatload to say about this bill. It's good legislation. Everything Representative Gomberg says I agree with, and we'd be happy to take any questions. But I'm really proud to co-sponsor this to support this industry in Oregon.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions of the Senator Representative? Representative Thatcher?
Thank you, and I appreciate you bringing the bill, even though I don't drink. I might want to make a mean whiskey crab soup or something. But I really think that you're onto something. Why not just expand it to all the locations that are owned by the distillery?
I think we'd be perfectly happy to do it. There was some sense, and I personally would be more than happy to see an amendment to make it unlimited as it is for wineries and breweries. We were trying to be cautious because some people who don't drink have concerns about distilled spirits. We think they can be used responsibly, and we think that these micro distilleries aren't making the products that people tend to use in inappropriate ways. I'm perfectly happy to see it expanded, but some people may wish to be a little bit more cautious, and we're trying to be respectful of that.
So this might be something another 2 years. It could be expanded.
Yes, Madam Chair. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Widener, then Representative Barton.
Has anybody hit you? Because, I mean, there's a difference between wine and beer and distilled, like about 70% alcohol content difference. One's at 80-90%, and the other one's at 8% to 11%. Has anybody approached you with concerns on that? Because you walk in, have a shot of whiskey versus a tasting of wine, you're going to walk out with two different effects. And I'm just wondering about driving and things like that, if that issue's been brought up at all.
Thank you, Representative. I happen to have a doctor here with me.
Well, we haven't got into the liver damage yet.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, thank you for that question. In the medical profession, we consider, and if you look at studies around alcohol consumption together, 5 ounces of wine equals 12 ounces of beer equals 1 ounce of distilled spirits in terms of the total alcohol that one consumes. And the tastings that people provide historically are proportionate. So the amount of alcohol that you're given in a tasting of wine, a tasting of beer, and a tasting of distilled spirits is essentially equivalent. I appreciate your concerns, but people aren't given a full shot at a tasting place. And this isn't necessarily specifically for tastings. Again, it's allowing the distilleries to sell full packages of these the same way they would sell a bottle of wine or a six-pack of beer.
Okay, Representative Barton.
Pass.
Okay, any other questions of the panelists? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Committee.
Thank you. Okay, I'd like to bring up Brian McMiniman and Clark McCool, please. Welcome on an early Monday morning.
Thank you. I'm a little nervous. This is completely out of my normal element, getting too far away from one of our places. But my name is Brian McMiniman, part owner of McMiniman's Pubs and Breweries, and this is Clark McCool, who is our master distiller. And I think it was just said pretty well. I think it's good for tourism. It allows us, we have two distilleries. We have 48 locations in Oregon, and we're in a lot of diverse locations, a lot of tourism. They come by, and we like to sell our product at our place. We have a lot of gift shops, little gift areas, sell a lot of apparel. And to have, beer bottles for sale or growlers. We have the wine that we make. We have a winery. And now to add the distillery to that mix, we've been distilling since 98. And it's nice now to have a nice range of products and some age on that products and those products. And, it's been a great thing for us. I was fortunate or unfortunate enough to be here back in 1985 when we started the brew pub legislation. And I think we all know where that has grown to. And we've been there pushing and screaming and kicking the whole way. And it's been great. And I think the distillery is set to take off. I think there's actually up to 50 distilleries in Oregon. So I think we're seeing the same steps all the way along, and I think the more that those that make the spirit can get out there and sell it and have it available at their locations is really going to help the business. So anything to add, Bart?
No, just to speak to the tasting limits that they're allowed at each location. They're strictly regulated in that
Could you identify yourself for the
record,
please?
My name is Clark McCool. I'm the distilleries manager for McMiniman's Incorporated.
Thank you.
Just to speak, the rules that the OLCC has created to strictly limit the amount that each individual is allowed to taste at each location is 2 1/4 ounce tastes per person. And so I think responsible people at those locations are able to address the concerns that you brought up earlier, Representative Widener. And as far as, the overall bill, it seems like it's a great thing. It's the retail sales have been a huge addition in our business in the last year and a half.
We were talking on the way down, 58% of our bottle sales were just sold at the 4 locations that we have now that we can actually sell our spirit. In our locations. That's a pretty big number. So I think this is, for our standpoint, it's a pretty important piece to keep the industry going.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panelists? Representative Holvey.
Thank you. Appreciate you bringing this forward. I think it's, and the legislators have brought it forward as well. I think it's aimed in a good direction. My question is a little bit. I know brew pubs have come into existence and really have done a great job, but I know breweries are still kicking and screaming a little bit because they have restrictions on what they can sell to the public, in terms of volume and food and things like that. Are there any restrictions in this bill for distilleries to serve food, or any restrictions in terms of the volumes that they can sell to the public?
I think you have to have a full on-premise license where the food rules come into play. So you basically have to have a restaurant to be able to do this. So, and as far as a limit on gallons, I don't think there's really a limit per distillery. I mean, all the distilleries are pretty small.
Mm.
So I don't know if that really answers your question or not. But.
Yeah.
Looking through the bill, I don't think there is any that is on-premises sales. Any other questions? Representative Widener?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Kind of glance through, basically, the way I'm understanding it would be at your regular brew pubs is where you'd have the distillery as well, because you have to have food and everything else with it, if I'm understanding this right. So I'm going through
that's
the bill.
That's correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you very much. I knew that the distilleries were truly an Oregon product when I was driving through Central Oregon a couple of years ago and they had an advertisement for organic vodka. So I figured it was truly an Oregon product.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Marshall Koba. Well, that's not Marshall Koba, but...
This is not Marshall Koba. He's in another hearing.
Okay.
For the record, I'm Denny Stoll. I'm a liquor agent here in Salem, Agency 1141. Currently the president of the Associated Liquor Stores of Oregon. And I know Marshall was prepared to testify this morning. I'm a little sideways, but I'm going to give you our take on understanding this bill. It appears to the liquor store agents that this is a privatization issue for certain brands. There are currently 245 liquor stores within the state of Oregon that can sell these distilled spirits. As I have heard testimony this morning, there are probably around 50 craft distillers, and if allowed to have four additional locations for each craft distiller, that would increase the distilled spirits outlet by 200 locations. We have concern of that. There's no specifics as to where these locations would be sited and how they would be sited. We're happy to sell their products in our stores currently, and I just, you know, we need more information before we take a stance.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Do you have any questions of Mr. Stoll, Representative Widener?
Yeah. Just going through it, if it looks like it's primarily just their product that they have in general, if it's stuck to a product that they make specifically like they do with their beer and they just have the distilled spirits there, which they could, I guess technically they have to buy them through you right now to sell them. So they're selling their liquor to you to buy it back, well, to OLCC to buy it back from you to get the tax on it. But would you be okay if it's basically just their alcohol that they make, that they're making themselves to sell over the counter?
Representative Wayne, Madam Chair, I think the issue that we have are the number of outlets that would increase throughout the state. The sales of the product currently goes through the commission, and we're able to sell their products. And if this goes through, they would be able to sell their products at various locations. We're concerned about how those locations and where they would be in relation to current liquor stores.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for testifying. I appreciate it very much for your information. Okay, that's the last person we have signed up. Is there anybody else to speak on House Bill 3435? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3435 and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2923. And I'd like to call up J.L. Wilson, Chris Davey, and Keith Curtis. And Drew, you're on deck.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing Associated Oregon Industries in support of House Bill 2923. We felt for the past 13 months, since February 29th of last year, that this was a very, very important and needed piece of legislation, both substantively and from a perception standpoint. The reason being is since the Cortez case was announced last year, you've had every HR manager, employment law firm, business association, chamber of commerce sending a pretty clear and consistent message to the companies in this state that under the Cortez ruling, the LLC members, and I should say the LLCs are a predominant form of business entity today, that the members under the Cortez ruling were no longer protected under the exclusive remedy statutes, which are the underpinning of the workers' comp system. And that has been a pretty clear message that's been delivered, and it's no wonder why, because a logical reading of that decision would indicate that the court said a member of an LLC is not protected under exclusive remedy statutes because they were not listed by the legislature as a protected entity or person under the statutes. So that is why that we brought House Bill 2923 to House Bill 2068 before it to fix what we all thought was the case anyways. I chaired the Management Labor Advisory Committee for 5 or 6 years, and we never contemplated that there was an instance or a situation in which members of LLCs weren't protected under the exclusive remedy statutes. The Dash 3 amendment before you recognizes that there's a differing point of view, that there are certainly people who do not feel like we do, and the Dash 3 amendment reflects the compromise between our two points of view to specifically list LLC members as a protected entity, a protected person under the exclusive remedy statutes, but also make clear that that protection only applies if that person is acting in the course and scope of employment. So it does represent compromise. That's what we do in this building, and so we support the bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Chris Davey with Safe Corporation. Thank you for hearing this bill today. We're here in support of this bill and in support of the Dash 3 amendments. And I'll just briefly describe the Dash 3 amendments. There are three elements to that. The first concerns the exclusive remedy protection that is extended to an employer. And the first part clarifies that protection only applies in the context of the employment. So let me give you an example. If the employer and an employee are driving down the same street in different cars, and the employer is not actually working that day, but the employee is working, and they collide, this amendment makes it clear that the employee would still have the ability to sue the employer for any negligence that the employer had in that auto accident. Second part of the amendment changes the words approximately caused that are in the statute today to substantial factor. And the reason for that is that the Supreme Court has expressed an opinion that the words proximately caused are outdated and a more appropriate and current legal test is substantial factor. And so by bringing those words into the statute, there isn't really any intent to liberalize, restrict, or change that legal test, but just to bring it up to date. And then the third part of the amendment deals with the effective date, and this just makes it clear that this bill only has a prospective effect, so it does not affect any cases that are in the pipeline today. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions to the panelists? Representative Wider and Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As someone who has an LLC and talked with accountants, I was under the assumption that we had these protections as well. So that's the reason for setting up the LLC. So I'm a little leery. I mean, to me, this should go back, and this is directed to SAFE. With pending cases that are in play, how many cases are in play that this would affect if we just went with the original bill rather than the Dash 3s?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, I'm only aware of the one case that is the case that has brought this bill forward. It's called Cortez. It was decided by the Court of Appeals about a year ago, and it is on appeal to the Supreme Court. There may be other cases, but I'm not aware of them.
Thank you. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To any one of you, you mentioned that in your testimony that exclusive remedy only applies in the context of employment. Would that be any different than exclusive remedy for any other corporate entity outside of an LLC?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, the amendment would make sure that that applies no matter what the corporate entity, LLC, corporation, whatever that corporate structure or that business structure might be.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Did you want to answer? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Heath Curtis, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Forest and Industries Council. OFIC has not actually been directly involved in kind of negotiating the outcome here. In fact, just this morning was the first time I had seen the Dash 3 amendments and had an opportunity to review. All of that said, our member, the Swanson Group, is actually named a defendant and employer in the Cortez case. Cameron Krause, general counsel there, made it very clear to me that we should be supporting AOI's efforts on this bill in any way we can. We're here to say good bill should pass. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Representative Holby.
Thanks. Chris, could you clarify your references to the corporate any corporate structure, because I'm not seeing corporations listed in this bill anywhere. So are they just exempt by nature of their structure?
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, the bill adds specifically the kinds of entities that well, it just wants to cover the entire playing field of different kinds of business entities. Some of them are already in the statute. The LLCs and partnerships were, there's really cleanup language to make sure that all kinds of business entities are covered. And my comment about that the amendment would apply to all business entities, that so that just means the ones that are already in the statute and the ones that are being added by this amendment.
Follow-up. So are corporate structures included in that list?
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, yes, they are.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Okay, I'd like to call up Ian Tolson. Tolson, Jan Meekum and Drew Hagendorf.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Ian Tolleson, Oregon Farm Bureau. We have a lot of our members that choose to go to the LLC route. So this is a big deal for us. We would like to see this bill passed. We support the compromise that is represented in the Dash 3 amendments. Having the protection to all the LLC members is vital for our companies, and would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jan Meekums, the State Director for NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business. Represent 7,500 small businesses in the state of Oregon. This bill is very, very important to our members. A large segment of our membership operate as an LLC entity. The exposure and liability that they feel as a result of the Cortez case is significant, and one single claim could be of the capacity it could put a small business out of business. And we feel it was not the intent originally that LLCs would be excluded, and so we wholeheartedly ask that you support this bill. I have not yet seen the Dash 3 amendments, but from the explanation that I heard this morning, we would probably be in support of that as well.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hagendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, Drew Hagendorf appearing today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors and the Oregon Self-Insurers Association, testifying in support of House Bill 2923 with the inclusion of the Dash 3 amendments. I think others before me have done a great job summarizing the policy and the politics here. Just note for the record that because this bill is workers' comp related, it did move through the Management Labor Advisory Committee a week ago Friday. They unanimously approved the concept with the inclusion of the Dash 3. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions of this panel? Okay. Thank you for your time. Okay, that's the last panel we have signed up. Anyone else that would like to speak on House Bill 2923? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2923. Okay, we have seven work sessions. The only problem is about all of them but three don't have fiscals in yet. So we can go through and deal with the amendments that we have been proposing. So we will do that. The first thing we're going to do is
open a work session.
Yes. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2706. Jan, if you could summarize.
Madam Chair, committee members, this is the bill that deals with self-service storage facilities and their ability to charge a late fee and how they advertise their foreclosure sale. You have before you a Dash 1 amendment that would restore the requirement that the notice of sale be published in a newspaper general circulation. And it deletes the language in the bill that would have allowed the notice of sale to be published in a periodical or advertised in other commercially reasonable manner. Yeah. And I think somebody wanted to speak to the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Burrows, did you want to speak on this? Or is he? Dave Burrows is going to speak on this issue, but he's not here. So just move on.
Of course. Madam Chair, perhaps Jan. So my understanding is the Dash 1, which I actually haven't seen, is removes the only part of the bill that I recall being disputed was the requirement to provide, basically publish in the newspaper. We heard from
right.
the committee. And
right.
so that, I believe, has been removed from the bill. This is the other non-controversial part. Is that correct?
The statute currently reads that you have to publish twice in a newspaper of general circulation. The bill was going to delete that and allow publication in a periodical or some other commercially available means, which could have been a website.
Yeah.
So that would be deleted, and the original language Great. Would be restored.
Okay, Mr. Peden, would you like to speak on this?
Let's see if Dave's in the hallway.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Greg Peden here on behalf of the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. At the public hearing, you heard from two of our members, Jeb Bladeen from the McMinnville paper and Mark Garber from the Portland Tribune and Pamplin Media Group. One of the concerns that was raised by the proponents of the bill was the cost of publishing notice in the newspapers. We have since provided each of you electronically and I believe in hard copy some examples of the types of notices that are printed in these newspapers, examples and the cost associated with them, and some of those range from as low as $11 and then depending on the size and the scope upwards of about $119, I think, is the other example that we provided you. So the amendments ask that we think obviously that notice is a very important piece of this, and that newspapers are the appropriate place for such notice, and so we're asking the to be restored is what is done in the Dash 1 amendments. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of the Mr. Peden? Okay, thank you.
Sir, Whit. Brad.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Whit.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Greg, if I remember correctly, what you provided us was not the cost per ad is not necessarily per storage unit, but rather the cost per ad for whatever sale may be occurring on a given day.
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions? Representative Thatcher.
Quickly, did you work with the storage people on this amendment?
Representative Thatcher, they were aware of our concerns of removing notice from the provision, right?
Yeah, any other questions? Representative Widener?
I didn't have one, but where you said they were aware of your concerns, but did you work with them on it to where there's a compromise? Because the testimony we had, some of these, I mean, they're very low-value units that they were having to pay for advertising. It cost them more to advertise it when they were already behind in rent for doing the auction. So I'm just wondering if there's an agreement there, or is this just your amendment that you guys worked on yourselves?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, I can't speak for Mr. Barrows, but I wouldn't say that he agrees with our amendment.
Did you have a question?
Just briefly, I was not here on the day that this came, and I received a call from Mark Garber, and I read his testimony, and he's become a friend over the years and somebody I trust very much. I think for me that the bill still does for our self-storage facility owners, and they still move forward on their what they're hoping to accomplish, which is the ability to charge the fee for the late payment. I understand the argument that we want to save money and not put an ad in the paper, but I also respect that not every one of our citizens has access to the internet, you know, just uses electronic mail, and there are still folks that like to open up that paper in the morning and check out the ad. And so I think with the work that they've done to show us that the ad costs are reasonable, I'm prepared to support the bill with the Dash One.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
You want to move it? Mm-hmm. Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash One amendments to House Bill 2706.
Okay, Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash One amendments to House Bill 2706. Is there any discussion? Representative Thatcher?
I would support these amendments right now because I see so many different takes on public notices and newspapers, and I think we need to have a bigger conversation about all that before we start making these little nick and, you know, little sundry changes here and there to various websites, which I really kind of think is the way we're going to eventually go. But I think for now we just need to wait a little bit. So,
okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? Okay, seeing none. Brandon, seeing none. Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted. And we're going to carry this over for final action. We're awaiting a fiscal revenue analysis on this. So I close the work session on House Bill 2706. Okay. And I'll open a work session on House Bill 2683. Jan, if you could refresh us on this one.
Committee members, this is a bill that authorizes the employer to pay wages through direct deposit or by other means of an electronic transfer without the employee's agreement. Committee heard the bill on March 1st. Since then, there's been a Dash One amendment that you have before you now. It allows the employer to pay by electronic means other than direct deposit, only with the agreement of the employee. And it clarifies that provisions do not intend to limit or affect a collective bargaining agreement.
Okay. I know that this was a bill that was worked on by a couple of parties, so at least to get the Dash One amendments. So, Mr. Barton.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash One amendments to House Bill 2683.
Okay. Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash One amendments to House Bill 2683. Is there any discussion? Okay. Is there any objection? Okay. Seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Is this one ready to go?
It's not, so if you just carry it over.
Okay, again, this is one that we're going to carry over. We're waiting for the fiscal on this one and a few others. This one's ready.
All right.
Open a work session.
Okay, if we can open a work session on House Bill 2383. Jan, if you could summarize for us.
Committee members, this bill prohibits a merchant from requiring the consumer to present their statement of account in order to obtain a refund, permits the Attorney General or the District Attorney to bring action against the merchant and a civil penalty up to $1,000. You heard the bill April 1st. Since then, there's the Dash One amendment that makes a violation an unlawful trade practice subject to civil action. And it deletes the proposed permission for the Attorney General or the District Attorney to restrain and prevent violation and obtain civil penalty. And I can just say that this bill came forward from Representative Barnhart, and I believe he worked with the Department of Justice on the amendment.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
There's no revenue impact, and there's a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay. Representative Barnhart.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash One amendments to House Bill 2383.
Okay, Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash One amendments to House Bill 2383. Is there any discussion? Representative Thatcher.
Yeah, I guess I would like a little clarification. I'm sure my colleague to the left can clarify for me, because he's just, you know, up on all this. But I'm wondering, okay, so basically what I'm hearing is a person can go directly to civil action rather than filtering it through an AG process. In other words, just do not pass go. go collect your $200 or $1,000 or whatever. Is that okay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Unlawful trade practices.
Yeah. You know, that's another, I think, topic that we need to have a general, broader discussion on, is all these additions to the unlawful trade practices that we have been really good at adding to, and I just think that though there is a good reason to keep our attorneys employed, because you know they pay you know taxes and all that, but
you won't see me bring this call. That's promised.
But I just feel like we are, I don't know, kind of doing things without really just thinking, oh, well, yeah, there ought to be a law, the type of thing, and just kind of jumping in feet first without really looking at the broader ramifications. That's all I got to say.
Okay. Other discussion? Okay. So, seeing none, is there any objection?
Yes.
There's objection, just note it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so the Dash 1 amendments are adopted with an objection noted.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2383 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton moves House Bill 2383 to the floor with the due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Wagner.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
No.
Representative Fagan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton.
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Kenmer.
Aye.
Chair Representative
Doherty. Aye. Okay, the motion passes. And Representative Barnhart, be noted as the carrier, please.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I may vote no on this bill on the floor. Okay. I'm still having some issues.
And it's
trying
always,
to see the need for it.
So. That is always our option.
Yes, you are.
Okay. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 2383, and I open a work session on House Bill 2448.
Madam Chair, committee members, this bill requires the issue subject to collective bargaining during the term of an agreement that's not resolved through negotiation or mediation to be resolved through binding arbitration. It shortens the time allowed for expedited bargaining from 90 days to 60 days, and it prohibits public employees from striking when the issue subject to bargaining during the term of agreement is subject to binding arbitration. The committee heard the bill February 22nd. Since then, there's a Dash 2 amendment. It restores the expedited bargaining period to 90 days, and it refers any unresolved matter to the State Conciliation Service Office for mediation before binding arbitration. There is no revenue impact, and we're waiting to hear back from the fiscal office.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2448.
Okay, Representative Barton moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2448. Is there any discussion? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious as to who brought the Dash 2 amendments and the wisdom behind that.
I can maybe address that a little bit. The Dash 2 amendments were brought kind of a coalition of management and labor, the OEA and a management attorney who I've worked with for quite a long time brought the idea of mediation to try to settle things before you actually have to go into a binding arbitration situation. And I think any of us that have worked in the labor industry know that sometimes when you get to that certain point, that mediation is an option that that works. And so it was actually a suggestion that was brought up by Ms. Hungerford that was brought up, that testified, and then they worked with the OEA on these amendments.
Madam Chair, it's my understanding, Ms. Hungerford, I believe, is my constituent. I think her almost all of her practice is representing school boards full time, if I'm not mistaken. She's
yes, I have bargained against Ms. Hungerford dozens of times. So.
Madam Chair, I guess what I'm wrestling with is, are we actually encouraging disagreement to percolate and
and boil over perhaps for an extra month as opposed to trying to resolve a potential dispute in a shorter amount of time?
Well, I think with the issue, especially with this one, I think the biggest issue on here is binding arbitration, because prior to this legislation, their only remedy is to take the entire unit out on strike. And so I think that what it is, I think it's more of a good, at least with my discussions with the parties, more of a good faith effort to really say, look, when it gets to a certain point, let's see if we can go through and work it out. But we still have the remedies at the end before that.
And I encourage that. I guess I would be in favor of a shorter time frame to achieve that end.
Okay. Representative Kinnear.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, in talking with Ms. Hungerford in her testimony here, I think one of her concerns was that the current timeline is too short. And very often they end up being in a very difficult position, and with just another week or so was her original testimony, that often would resolve it. And so that was the reason for the flexibility.
Okay, other discussion. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I trust you're the chief sponsor of the bill, and I, you know, appreciate that you worked with some folks to try to get, you know, to a point. I guess to Representative Wood's comment, you know, him and I both had the same kind of puzzled look, because I think in the end, negotiations are only going to work if both people are there in good faith, both sides of the argument. And I think when you're there in good faith, spreading it out, you know, further, you can expedite that process, and you can be prepared for each and every meeting. And, you know, forgive me, but in my experience, generally, the labor side of the table is there on their days off. Management is setting it on their clock Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. And keep in mind, I know that that's a firefighter schedule. We don't bargain at 1 a.m. in the morning on a Saturday night. But it's, you know, I appreciate the work that went into it. I'll support the bill. But, again, just a word to everybody, you know, negotiate in good faith regardless of what you're negotiating with.
And I think one kind of clarification, this is for interim bargaining. In other words, this is the midterm bargaining, that once a contract's been settled, then management comes in and says, forgot, but now we're going to bargain over X. And so it is interim bargaining, which is a little bit different situation than full-blown on bargaining. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wasn't here when this bill was heard, apparently, because I don't have any notes in here, or it was just so fast I wasn't even able to enter them. I'm not real clear on if this particular amendment is supported by, you said there was a coalition of management and labor. I wasn't clear on who that would have been, because I noted that there was a lot of objection from the counties, just all kinds of management people, I guess you could say. So I'm not clear on whether this amendment was supported by those people or not. And I see some people in the audience. I'm wondering if they could speak to it.
You know, that I don't know. I did not. I can't remember. I heard from them. I didn't get anything in writing. Representative Widener?
Madam Chair, no.
So I don't know.
On this here, a lot of my school districts, superintendents that I've talked with, and my county departments are not in support of this bill. So I, even with the amendments, I probably won't be supporting it. Okay. The amendments do make it a little bit better, but they're not over-enthusiastic about it, and they feel like they were kind of drugged to the table with
management,
this coming forward.
They don't have to do interim bargaining. They can wait till full bargaining is full on. So, anyway, Representative Barton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I suppose I have a different take from my colleagues. I recognize that the Dash 2 amendments are not beloved by any side. However, I really appreciate both sides. At least I know management's attorney and or one of the primary attorneys in OEA negotiating this. Anytime we touch PUTPA, it's often a third rail. People come unglued. The mere fact that everyone's kind of mildly discontent as opposed to up in arms here today, I take as actually a remarkable accomplishment. And I just appreciate the cooperation that went into the amendments.
Okay, thank you. More discussion. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to have to vote no on the Dash 2 amendment. I just think that additional time encourages additional disagreement.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion? Okay. Is this where we are?
I moved the dash twos, did I not?
Right. Do
okay.
you want to ask if there's any objection?
Okay.
Or do you want
is there
to
any objection?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so we've got two objections. They are duly noted. The amendments are adopted.
And we do not have the fiscal, so if you want to carry it
okay.
over.
And we don't have the fiscals on this one, so we'll need to carry this one over also. What I'm going to do is close the public hearing or the work session on House Bill 2448 and reopen the work session on House Bill 2706. Give Mr. Burrows time to testify.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Dave Burrows with the Self Storage Association. I gather I'm a little late to the fire, but hopefully the house hasn't burned down yet. It's my understanding you've adopted the Dash 1 amendments, and all I wanted to say to the committee, and I apologize for not being here at the time, is you've just all this does is add an expense to business entity. Some of them are large companies. Nobody cares much about those folks, and I understand that. But some of them are mom and pop self-storage facilities, and using an ad in the newspaper is not the way they get people to come and bid on material that's in a locker that's been abandoned. They do it by posting on one of the three email sites that are currently available. So it's fine that you adopted them, I guess, but just understand it's a meaningless expense to the operators. And that's all I wanted to say, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And I appreciate very much your holding it and letting me come and say my little piece.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of Mr. Burrows?
Just a quick point, and with all the respect in the world for this man here, Mr. Burrows, we did raise the threshold from $100 to $300, which is going to be helpful to some of these mom and pops in particular, I think, so that they're not being overwhelmed with the current situation where $100 of value. I mean, we did help them, and I think I had mentioned that, but I just wanted to mention that, and I appreciate Mr. Burrows. Thank you.
May I just say a word on that, Madam Chair, and I'm sorry to hold the committee up, but and that is helpful, and we are grateful. Representative Matthews is correct. There was discussion at one point about raising that threshold to a higher level because of the earlier bill that had gone through this committee. There was Representative Burgers, which was $1,000. And my suggestion was to just leave the bill as it is. The attorney who spoke to you came and talked about this bill, the national expert on it, indicated to me that $1,000 would be very helpful. The 100 to 300 was helpful, a little helpful, but every little bit helps.
Yeah.
So, Representative Matthews is correct. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Widener.
Just real quick, Mr. Burrows, how many times do they have to run the ad?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, twice.
So $119, so $240 is what they'd be looking at advertising costs on the higher end in the paper for a unit that might be worth $300, depending upon how it
Madam functions. Chair, Representative Widener, that's roughly correct, and there are cases where it is higher, where a newspaper may have kind of a monopoly in the area, because there are definitions about how much what kind of a newspaper it is. It can't be a little weekly that I put out. It has to be a real paper in general circulation in the area in which the unit is located. So it's money.
Madam Chair, may I follow up?
Please.
Do some of these newspapers that kind of have that monopoly, do they take some of these guys to small claims court if they advertise in another newspaper that's in the county that they don't think is the right paper?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, I'm not aware of any. I don't know. I have heard anecdotal stories about higher fees being charged, but I'm not testifying to that because I don't know. but I don't know the answer to your question. I'm sorry to say.
Thank you. Any other questions of Mr. Barrows?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, for your courtesy.
You're welcome. Thank you. So I close the work session on House Bill 2706, and a public hearing on 27, a work session on 2706, and I open a work session on 2903.
And Chair, committee members, this bill committee heard March 25th that requires the employer who employs six or more individuals to post a summary of the statutes and rules regarding the employment rights for victims of domestic violence. And it modifies the definition of what an eligible employee is by deleting the requirement that they've worked a specified number of hours and days to be eligible for the protection. There are no amendments before you. There is no revenue impact, and there is a minimal fiscal impact, and there's no subsequent referral.
Yeah, thank you.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2903 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Barton moves House Bill 2903 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Kennemer.
Earlier, Representative Cameron was here, and he's evidently not able to be here now. He had said that he was working on an amendment that would require the agency to send out these forms to small employees. He said, you know, he's, as an independent businessman, he's having a great deal of difficulty with continual small regulation like this, and he wanted to object and was hopeful to be able to have a chance to submit an amendment, but it's not yet been drafted. It's in the process of drafting, but not voted.
Technically, I don't know how to deal with that.
If the committee would like to hold off that amendment,
okay.
You could withdraw this motion and just reschedule the bill.
Okay.
If you would, Madam Chair, that would be a courtesy to extend, and I appreciate that. It's an awkward thing, and I'm sorry I didn't have a chance.
And if you could encourage him to get it in very quickly, we would appreciate that.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I withdraw my amendment, my motion.
Okay, so Representative Barton withdraws motion. And I'm going to hold this over until we have an amendment from Representative Cameron. So I close the work session on House Bill 2903. And open a work session on House Bill 3361.
Madam Chair, committee members, this bill defines comparable community for the purposes of arbitration involving Department of Corrections security staff employees. Committee heard the bill March 22nd. There are no amendments. There's no revenue impact, and we are waiting yet for the fiscal impact. So actually, there's no point in holding the work session.
Okay. We'll be holding this one over, too, waiting for the fiscal. So I close work session on House Bill 3361. And that's it. Okay, any other business before the House today?
Or the committee?
Okay, seeing none, I close the committee on House Business and Labor for April 1st, 2013.
Okay.
Thank you.